Oh, she's here. Hi, everybody. My name is Bill. I'm an alcoholic. Can you hear me? Is it good? Bad? Thanks, Rachel. Yeah, I am an alcoholic, and I prayed before the meeting, so we'll see what happens. I've had many amazing speeches I've given this week for you guys, but I don't know which one's going to come out. But I'm sure I will stay sober through this whole thing. My sobriety date is May 25th of 1985. Yeah. I'm much more impressed than you are. So my first AA meeting, I was 18 years old. I was wearing pajamas. I remember I was pissed about that because I was in a treatment center and you had to wear pajamas until you like obeyed some rules and stuff. And if you didn't act right, you had to put the pajamas back on, you know. And it was in the cafeteria of a hospital. And I remember we were drinking chocolate milk on tap, and chain smoking Marlboros, drinking chocolate milk. That's a really good combination. But my first day meeting the guy talking, believe it or not, his name was Bill. Bill was sober 30 years, and once I heard that, that made me want to throw up right there. And I just remember thinking, like, you've been in AA for 30? Like, it just sounded like the worst deal known to man. Like, I just felt sorry for him. I mean, 30 years and not drinking, what's good about that? Like, he's all impressed about it or whatever, bragging about it. I thought it was horrible. It was like, kill yourself, you know? I was 18. And the only reason I was there, I did not think I was an alcoholic. My best friend was in there. He had stolen one of our teacher's ATM cards and had racked it up. I remember this. He didn't know he had like a hoodie on. The thing takes a picture whenever you take money. So they had his face like this, and the detectives were showing us, and we're like laughing. We don't know who it is, you know. But you know, I would always think like he's an alcoholic or whatever. He's got a problem. I don't have a problem. But I had gotten my second DWI, flipped my car, and I had just turned 18. And I was looking at going to jail, and he was in there. And like the day before, he's like, dude, I think we got a problem. I'm like, no, you got a problem. You're in that hospital, and there's no drugs, you know. And then after I got the DWI or whatever, I was like, shit, you know what I mean? I got to do something, because I was looking at going to jail. And I wasn't worried about it at first. I thought it was funny. But until the older guys were like, dude, I don't know what you're laughing about. That place is messed up. You know what I mean? They were telling me about this jail was like built during the Civil War. It didn't sound good. You know what I mean? And I was like, you know, and I'd seen, I was talking about this, but in high school, I'd seen One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, you know, with Jack Nicholson, that movie. And I was, the big thing is like, I'm going to pretend I'm an alcoholic to get out of going to jail. You know what I mean? Like, you know, get good boy points or whatever. So that's why I was there. But, you know, it was crazy because I had never been, I mean, I only drank like 5 years. So I started at 14 and I was, you know, at AA the first time at 18. But I just remember, I remember being so annoyed, like if you've been in treatment, them taking your blood pressure and the seriousness of everyone, like, are you okay? Do you think you have a problem? You know, all that kind of stuff. And then everybody coming up to you and shaking your hand and be like, I'm an addict. And I'd be like, yeah, man, like, you know what I mean? Like, keep that shit to yourself, you know what I mean? Or like, I'm an alcoholic, and everybody's like, I'd be like, and I would clearly be like, I am not an alcoholic. I am not an addict, you know what I mean? And I don't know, it's just, looking back, it's just funny. But I just remember, you know, being sober like 8 hours. Remember that? Remember the first time? And thank God we could smoke when we were in treatment. You just chain smoke, because that's all you got. Or cigs, you know what I mean? You just smoke a lot. And we had the cigarette lighter on the wall, the like electric cigarette lighter on the wall. But I don't know. We had groups and all that kind of community meeting. And I just thought the whole thing, they were really too much on this whole alcoholism thing. I knew for sure I was not an alcoholic. But that guy's talk, the things I remember is he said the only hopeless case was 24 empty bottles. And the other thing he talked about that I really latched onto is apparently in the 1950s, you know, Vicks inhalers, like the menthol things, they used to have benzedrine in them. And he talked about you could bust them open and you put that piece of paper in your mouth, you suck on it, you would speed on that benzedrine. And that's all I thought about the rest of the meeting. I was like, these people in AA know stuff they could be useful. You know what I mean? And there was a Walgreens I could see, and I just thought, remember they used to have them in the fishbowl, like on the counter? I thought, I need to get to that Walgreens, and, you know, I won't be sober anymore, and I will get relief or whatever. But that's my earliest thing with that. But like I said, I started drinking at 14. You know, I used to hitchhike a lot, you know, back in the 20th century. This was Uber back then. And I mean, I watch serial killer shows now. I mean, I'm the first guy to jump in a van with no windows, you know what I mean? And it's like the fact that I'm alive is a miracle. But I would hitchhike. I'd do whatever. I mean, it was just, I got to get to this trailer park. Because I grew up in this horrible place. It was in the country. We had 7 acres. We had horses. There were like lakes. It's beautiful. Couldn't stand it. You know, I wanted to get to like the Section 8, man, where the action is. You know, like, you know, his dad sells acid. You know what I mean? Kind of thing. Those are the friends. I mean, I would ignore things like they don't have electric or food, but hey, you know what I mean? You can get high with your parents. It's pretty cool. So that's what I was doing. But I don't know. I would say. My first drink was, that I remember, was Carlo Rossi wine, and I just remember it tasted horrible, but I just remember once I got that buzz, I just remember smiling, and all those muscles were foreign to me, you know what I mean? Because I was the type of kid, I was very, I mean, there was a lot of insanity, like mental illness type stuff as a kid for me, and like domestic violence type stuff. My mom is hell on wheels, but anyway, my mom, I would just see my mom like jumping on men like spider monkeys and attacking them and stuff, or running her car into their car. I mean, just crazy shit. But, you know, where I thought we were all going to die. And, but, you know, things were pretty calm for the most part when I started drinking. But I mean, I was just that type of kid, you know, I didn't know what it was, but I mean, I just always had, I guess, I would have called it shy when I was young, but what it was anxiety, I would say. It was heavy-duty anxiety. Like, if I would have been born 10 years later or in a different family, I would have been on all kinds of, probably, Ritalin and all that kind of stuff. I would have been heavily medicated, but they beat us back then. So they didn't beat you. You know, and they'd be like, sit in that chair, or, you know, and I got beat. It didn't seem to make any difference, but, I did get beat. But, and I needed it. I mean, I was thinking the other day, you know, I can talk smack about my mom, but, I mean, if it weren't for her, I probably would have went to prison, you know, for sure. But, so, anyway, I just remember the first time I drank, I just felt amazing. And immediately, I was like, every time, you know, I can drink, I'm going to drink. And then the other thing was, you know, at that time of me growing up, I didn't have older brothers or sisters, or I didn't know anybody that did any of that kind of stuff. So all my education was like TV, and it was like old 70s TV, like police, like Dragnet and freaking police. But all I thought, you do drugs, you go to jail, like immediately. And I thought all drugs were like the guy on top of the building that thinks he can fly or whatever and jumps off and dies, you know. So it's kind of funny that I was scared of it, but it didn't stop me. And I think that's important. You can't just become an alcoholic if you don't have some real willpower, you know. Because anything you're terrified of, you will do. Like I a big one for me was LSD. I was like, I saw this documentary, and they showed people having flashbacks and the psych ward and straitjackets. And I was like, I would never do that shit. About a week later, my cousin had a bunch, and I ate like 14 hits, man. And because I thought it wasn't real, well, it was. And then, and I just remember praying a lot. You know, I'd be like, God, please don't let me be retarded after this, you know. And I wasn't, but again, never stopped me from doing it, you know. But the main thing I just want to say about drugs real quick is I thought that was my thing. Because it sounded cool, but drugs to me are like, they're like going to Busch Gardens. It's a lot of fun, but they don't solve all your problems. Alcohol solves my problems. And I know that because there are many times, and we were reading this, it was last night. I was in a meeting, they were reading, the topic was they were reading parts out of Bill's story. And the first thing that I ever related to out of the big book is the line in Bill's story where he says, should I kill myself? And then he's like, no, not now. I'll just get good and drunk. And I remember thinking, like, I can't tell you how many times it would be something where I would get busted for whatever, like stealing or something from my, I remember times my mom would bust me stealing. She'd just have tears running down her face. She'd be like, I cannot believe my son would steal from me. And, you know, and then I would feel bad. And if you're an alcoholic, you're like, you know what? I'm going to kill myself. She's going to feel really bad that she, you know, called me out on this. And she'll be sorry. But if I'm going to kill myself, I'm going to drink. And then once I start getting a buzz, I don't want to kill myself. Once I start drinking, I'm like, I'm moving to California. You know, once I get a buzz, I'm like, I'm joining the Marines. You know, it's going to be awesome. I'm going to be a captain, whatever. I mean, who knows what it is, whatever I saw on TV recently. You know, but it's like what alcohol does for me is I believe it's all done. All the work and all that, it's completed. You know what I mean? There's no basic training or none of that. It's all done. People are saluting me and kissing my ass and telling me how amazing I am, you know. And I just feel fantastic. But the only thing is none of it's real. You know what I mean? Then I pass out and then I got to, you know, get money again and start the whole thing over. So I think the second or third time I drank, I had my first blackout. But I didn't know what that was until I got to AA. And I always talk about blackouts because that's where I learned it, is in AA. But that's when you drink and your brain shuts off, but your body's out doing stuff. You know, and if you're like me, you're not helping the poor or anything like that. You know, you're usually just doing some bizarre stuff. And when people tell you, it's not funny. It's funny to them. It's humiliating to you. And I'm just grateful that, you know, I got to do it. I feel bad for you kids with the freaking phones and stuff, man. The videos and stuff. But I mean, I would, you know, and what I would do is I would just wake up and I would just call the last face I remember seeing. You know, and you call and you're like, hey, man, it was pretty crazy last night. And they just are irritated and disgusted sounding. And they're just like, you don't remember. And you're like, don't remember what? And they'll be like, you know, don't go to Tony's house. And you're like, why not? Like, what did I do? And they're like, you don't even want to know. And then when they tell you it's so messed up, you don't want to know either. But with me, it would usually involve me using the bathroom where there wasn't a bathroom. And, you know, trying to pee on the TV or something in front of people. Or trying to make out with somebody's wife. And I'm 15 years old, you know. It'd be embarrassing because I'd always hang out with older people, you know. But and the other big thing, especially early on, most of my drinking, anybody I drank with one time, that's it. Anybody who's halfway normal, they will not tolerate my bullshit but once. You know what I mean? And I would get, like, blacklisted immediately. You know what I mean? Like, and it get to be wild later on because the way I'd black out, I'd go places, and I don't know that I've been kicked out of them. So I'd get there, and like all my friends go in there, no, he can't, no way, he can't come in. And I'd be like, what? Like, what did I ever do to you? And they're like, dude, you were here, you were running your mouth to his old lady, or like whatever. And I'd be like, what? Why would I do that? And like, just trust me. So I was an outside cat from early on, you know, like everybody could go inside. I'm hanging out on the porch by myself, you know, or in the yard or stuff. I mean, and you would think if I was normal, I would stop, you know what I mean? And I would just feel like I was a victim or whatever. But, you know, it just kept going like that. And I would hitchhike a lot. And a lot of the times, this is in Ohio, where I'm from, I would just be walking either in heat like this with no ride for like 20 miles or whatever, or below zero. And I'd be so mad about it. And I would never think that it's because I'm an alcoholic. You know what I mean? And I'd be blaming my mom. Like, why don't we live on the bus line? Or why don't we live closer to the city? And all this kind of stuff. And, you know, it just went on. So finally at 17, I got my license. My dad got me this 65 Mustang. And, you know, it was like a $600 car. And I completely was ungrateful as hell for it. You know, I'd look at the one kid whose parents were loaded, had like a new Trans Am or something, or a Corvette or Camaro or whatever. And I'd be so mad, you know, or jealous. But the reality is most kids did not have a car. You know what I mean? They could use their parents' car maybe or something like that. I had my own car, which was good because their primary transportation would have been destroyed. But the minute I started driving, you know, I was having NDEs, that's near-death experience, in case you don't know, almost every day. And a lot of people, they wouldn't ride with me. People would get out of the car, like, I'd be driving, they'd just be like, no, wait a minute, I'm walking. They'd get out of the car and leave. I would do things like drive over the concrete blocks in a parking lot, like both of them, you know. I was always getting my car stuck. Like if I came to your house, I'd get my car stuck in the ditch like this, the headlights going up to the second floor. One of my favorites, and my dad's a mechanic. You know, I remember my dad would always come in and he'd be like, what happened to your car? I'm like, what do you mean? And he'd be like, come here. And he'd take me out, and there'd be some big ass dent. And I'd make up some story and he'd be like, telephone poles are on the other side of the road. That's impossible. You know, I'd get so mad. But my favorite one was one time he was like, what were you doing driving in a cornfield? I was like, I wasn't driving in a cornfield. He gets the creeper out, gets under the car, pulls a big corn stalk out of the drive shaft. You know, because I would be doing my usual thing, man. I'd like drop a J or whatever. I'm going to get next thing. You know, I'm bouncing through a cornfield. You know, 50 miles an hour. And I mean, I didn't do this once in a while. It was like every day. And I would never think I got a drug problem or I got an alcohol problem. You know, I'd drive around with a bong that was like this tall in my car. You know, no way you could hide it if you got pulled over. And I would just think, you're stupid. That's your problem. You know what I mean? And that's what I thought I'd give you. I think, you're just stupid. You know what I mean? You just need to be more careful or whatever. So I had my license maybe 6 months, get my first DUI. I'm pulling out of an Arby's. I'm on muscle relaxers. I'm drunk. I'm drinking Colt 45. I was thinking about this the other day. We used to love, I don't know why I thought of this. We used to love to buy cases of 40s. That's what we would get. It was like the cheapest way to get the most, you know, and we would have like chugging contests, you know, with like stopwatches and timing them. So needless to say, I get a DWI. And so now I don't have a license. And I get to see the reality of how much people like to hang out with me. It's just me calling people like, "You gonna come pick me up?" And no one wants to come pick me up. Like, why would anybody want to pick me up? You come pick me up, I'm going to pitch in like $2. I'm going to drink five times that. And I'm going to attract police attention always. You know, I'm the guy, we get to places, people are punching me. Like, they're like, "You stay in the car. Don't hang your head out the window." I'm the guy, I start fights. I don't fight. I just start the fight. You know what I mean? Just, you know, running my mouth and stuff. And, you know, just all kinds of crazy stuff. But yeah, so that was like 6 months, and I don't know, man. I think I had to go, to like a class. You know what I mean? Like an alcohol class or something with a juvenile court or something, and like with a counselor and like somebody from NA. And I remember thinking, this guy from NA, the best part, the guy from NA, they were robbing pharmacies and shooting up horse tranquilizers, and I never shot up only because I never got the opportunity, but. I remember thinking like, now see, he's got a problem. And that's the way I'd always be. You know, I'd be like, if I ever start shooting a horse tranquilizer, I'll go to NA, you know. But I got my license back. I turned 18. And I'll never forget turning 18. All my friends are like, "So what are you going to do now you're 18, you know?" And I was like, I was drinking a beer. And I said, "Well, I imagine I'll be going to jail soon." And they were like, "Why are you so negative, you know?" And I'd be like, I knew, you know what I mean? It was just like. But I didn't think it was because my drinking or anything. I just thought it's just my luck, you know? So, and I just totally thought I was like a bad person or whatever, you know what I mean? And I just deserve all this, you know, because I'm a terrible person. So, I was 18, and it was so crazy. My poor mother, at this time, a friend of mine's dad was disabled, and I got a hold of, he had like unlimited Demerol. So we're stealing all this Demerol pills. And I really never liked that kind of stuff. I like Valiums with alcohol. But anyway, we're eating this Demerol. And you take like one, nothing happens. You take two, I'd wake up 3 days later. And I would visit people, which they didn't appreciate. Because like we'd be talking to your parents like in the kitchen. And I would just face plant on the table or whatever. And I'd wake up to people like, "Man, don't come over here like that." You know what I mean? Or I'd be in the car and their dad's going like, "What's wrong with that young man?" You know, I'd be on the floor or whatever. And... But my mom, she really was freaked out about it because I would get rides home and it'd be like the temperature is now, like in the summer. And I'd be too tired to make it in the house. So I'd just like get in the front yard and just face plant in the front yard. And she'd come home and I remember she'd roll me over crying like, "Oh my God, he's dead." I'm like, "Mom, will you shut up? I'm taking a nap. I'm tired. You know, there's ants crawling all over my face and stuff. We're going to counseling." And she'd be crying. And I would just be like, "You are so dramatic." You know, and I think that's a big thing about being an alcoholic too. You're ruining everybody's life, and you're like, "What? Like, I am, just mind your own business, you know what I mean? Just pay the cable bill and give me food, you know?" And I would always just feel like I wasn't hurting anyone. But the other thing at that time, when I got my license back, she got me this job, so I was a dishwasher at this restaurant, and it was before computers and stuff, so it was awesome because I had to clean the bar. You know, so that's where all the booze is. So I go in there with a cup of coffee, pouring, you know, I'd start getting drunk first thing in the morning. Then you can eat, you know, I'd make like plates of French fries like this big and stuff. But I'd clean the walk-in and they had canned beer in there. So I'd throw a bunch of beer in the garbage can and cover it with lettuce, hide all that beer out of the cooler. I never missed work, you know, because I'd go to work every night and steal alcohol. But then they got hip to that, and what I started doing was I'd wash out these gallon mayonnaise jars from the salad bar. I'd clean them out real good, and I'd fill them up with Michelob on tap. So I show up to these high school parties. I got, like, Kraft blue cheese. And people are like, "What are you drinking?" I'm like, "Michelob." You know, I'm drinking it, and everybody's like, "You are going to prison," you know? And I thought everybody thought I was the coolest person there, and people were just like, you are an alcoholic. And I would get so mad, you know, because at 15 I had people doing that to me. And if you're an alcoholic, you've had it where you're drinking with people and they're looking at you with disgust. And they're like, some people shouldn't drink. I would get so mad. Like, you're drinking? Why are you judging me, you know? But, you know, my drinking was different. So, anyway, needless to say, I turn 18. My dad, I don't know why, helps me get my license again. We're having this family meeting. My dad doesn't live there. He travels, and they're divorced and everything. And I use that for any time I get in trouble. Be like, well, if you guys wouldn't have got a divorce, you would have got me involved in Scouts. I'm sure I wouldn't be strung out on drugs today. Give me some money. You know, kind of thing. I was that kind of kid. But she's like, why would we let him get his license? She's like, he's in the yard. He can't operate the door. My mom would always bust me. I'd be trying to get in the door. And I'd have a key, and I couldn't. Like, you know, I'd make so much noise. It would end up, I hear you trying to get in here. And I'd be like, I'm not drunk. I'm just, you know, some crap. But whatever reason, he helped me get my license. And I mean, it was very expensive. I remember that. But so he's like, just promise me you won't drink and drive. I'm like, no, I got it. I get it. It's this Mothers Against Drunk Driving. That's this whole thing, you know. And so I go out that night. I tell him I'm going to this party. I got somebody with me who's not drinking. He's supposed to drive the car. You know, and I get hammered doing beer bongs, you know, the funnels. And I mean, I was like drunk, you know, when you try to go through a door and you hit this side, then you hit that side, and you know, that was that kind of drunk. And when people are talking to you like you're a toddler, you know, my friends are going, Bill, please let me drive. And I'm like, no way, I insist on driving. Anyway, flip my car, got on a guardrail. The guy with me is not drunk, so he's clawing me like an animal, you know, he's clawing me and stuff. I punched him, I'm like, look, just relax. We got to get out. And so I'm trying to start the car. It's like on its side, you know. I'm trying to drive out of there. And anyway, long story short, the freaking, I decide to go to this house. And I'm like, I'm going to call my mom, get a tow truck. Nobody will know because we live out in the sticks. And I'll never forget, I bust my way into this guy's house. He's in his robe. And I'm like, I call her. And he's like, well, if there's been an accident, shouldn't we call the police? And I'm just staring this guy down like, what is your problem, bro? Like, we don't need any police. And I'll never forget, there was a fireplace kit there. I'm looking at the fireplace poker, and I'm like, God, I don't want to kill this guy. But he's not really giving me any choice. You know? I think he's going to call the police when I go back outside, so maybe I need to give him a couple raps with this fireplace poker so he's quiet. And thank God I didn't do that. But anyway, DWI, I don't have to go into all that. But then my buddy, you know what I mean? He calls me. I'm like, what's the number of that place? So that's how I got in at 18 to the treatment center. And then the other cool thing about being in the treatment center is guys, my high school buddies that had just vanished, you know what I mean? You think they've been abducted by aliens. You don't know they're in treatment. They're bringing meetings into the treatment center on me. I'm like, Kevin, what are you doing here? I'm like, oh, I'm in AA, man. And they're like coming in. And I was like, really? Like, is this like a joke or something, you know? And anyway, and they had a young people's meeting. I mean, there were a lot of people there, you know, under 20. They're like in AA, bizarro. But that was kind of cool. But, you know, I still couldn't buy that I was an alcoholic. And I didn't like all the groups and stuff. And I get in a lot of trouble in the groups. But I remember I would get so mad, though. That I'd be like, look, my life's not unmanageable. And they'd be like, well, when did you decide you wanted to go live in the workhouse, this jail place? And I got so mad, I just wanted to punch that counselor in the face. And anyway, we went to meetings. You know, they'd load us on the van. We'd go to outside meetings. And the best meeting, or my favorite meeting, was Monday Night Young People's. This was in Cincinnati, 1985. But there was like 400 people in this meeting. And I'd say they were from like 15 years old to probably like 30. And it was just wild to see all those people, you know, young, like that were sober. And I was like, well, you know, if I ever become an alcoholic, I could go to this. And that's totally what I was like. I was like, I'm not an alcoholic, you know. So, and then we go to this meeting called Friday Night Live, another young people's meeting. And I heard this guy speak, and Killer Joe, and that guy was my sponsor. You know, that's the guy I got. But his story was just off the chain. I mean, he talked and he laughed like he was on acid. And he kept his cigarettes in his socks. He was wearing like a track suit. And everybody smoked too, man. I mean, everybody smoked. And, but his story, I remember just being, I would hate AA, but some of the speakers, I'd get there and they'd just have me laughing. And I'd be laughing so hard. But But then I would be like, I'd realize it, and I'd be like, wait a minute, I'm sober. This ain't funny. Like, I'm not joining your cult or whatever. You know? But I would like the stories, and I'd be like, how are these people happy about being sober? You know what I mean? I didn't get that. And this guy was like me. You know, he sounded like me. But this guy had a job, and he had his driver's license, you know? He didn't have a pending court date. And he'd say things that impressed me. Like, he said, man, he goes, I got a house with 2 yards, a front and a back. And he was like, check that out. And I was like, I was impressed, you know? Like, man, that's nice. So I didn't ask him to be my sponsor. I was going to, but I didn't. And anyway, I get out of there. I did my whatever, I guess, 28 days. I got out. I went to court. They're like, isn't it commendable? Young William is going to Alcoholics Anonymous. It was pretty impressive back then, I guess. So when they suspended all my time, I did not go to jail. I was on probation for like 2 years. And when I got out, though, I remember one of the alumni, one of the like volunteers, the guys from AA that came in, you know, and did groups and stuff. He was smoking a cigarette. I'll never forget this. I'm leaving. I'm taking my clothes out to my mom's car. He's like, you're getting out. You're going to get high. And I was like so mad. And that's all I was thinking about. I swear to God, it was like when you know, when you're new and people are reading your mind and it freaks you out. And he's like, you're going to get high. And I was like, no, I'm not. That's all I was thinking about. And I was like, you don't know me. Like, all this kind of stuff. And it kind of creeped me out there that he totally knew. And we got home, and my parents were like, you want to go eat, honey? And I was like, no, Mom, I just want to be home. They weren't even out the driveway. I was hitting the bong. And I was like, well, I'm just going to do this tonight, you know, till 11:59. And then I am, you know, I'm going to start my life of sobriety. Well, I looked over the clock. It was 12:01. I was like, dang. Tomorrow night, 11:59, and you know what happened? I couldn't stop. I couldn't get this whole thing. This one's too many, a thousand's not enough. And in AA, when I was new, all they ever said was, "It's not. It's the first drink that gets you drunk." And I thought that is so retarded. It's not the first drink. If I would just stop at 15, it would be cool. But so I couldn't stop. And then I was like, you know, and I sponsor myself, so. You know, I'm like, well, you don't get your license back for 2 years. You know, how are you going to get in trouble? You know, once you turn 21, that'll be a good time to join AA. 19's way too young. And, you know, you don't rob people. Well, 6 months later, I got a robbery charge. I'm facing 5 to 15 years of prison. I'm back in the same stupid treatment center. I got the same idiot counselors going like, hey, weren't you just here? You know, I got the same people from AA coming in. Well, what are you doing back here? Did it get worse like we told you it would? I just want to punch them all in the face, you know. Just, I hated it, man. I mean, it just made me so mad. And I hated AA, like, I hated the people laughing, like, because I'm an outsider, right? And everybody's laughing, and I'm like, you guys think this is hilarious. This poor guy, he's lost his family, he lost his job, he got beat up by the cops, and you know, AA, they think that's hilarious. And I was like, I'm never going to join this thing. But anyway, I did what, you know, I got my back against the wall. I'm trying to get a good report card from AA, so I'm reading the big book like it's Harry Potter or something. You know, like it's spells, you know. I'm praying. I mean, it's amazing how open-minded I become about God when I'm in some serious trouble. And you know, alcoholism is not a disease, but boy, if you give me a couple felonies, I'm an alcoholic. It's a serious illness. I need help. I need treatment, yes. Probably a therapist as well. You know, I become very serious and, you know, malleable, I guess. And, you know, anyway, we went to that same meeting and that damn guy was talking again. So I asked him, or no, actually he was speaking at it's called the Fall Ball. It was like an event intergroup put on. It was crazy. It was the freaking Myers Winery. It's at a winery. And I remember this big tank of water. I remember I was thinking, you know, I'm in treatment. I got the armband. I'm like, man, you got to be a way to climb up there and get in that tank and swim, you know. But I asked him to be my sponsor. And he gave me his number and stuff. And I don't know if he said it that night, but I remember telling him, and they called him Killer Joe. So I was like, that's what I need. Because I was like, I need like a Marine drill sergeant. I need somebody who's going to kick the shit out of me and make me work this program and get sober. And he just started laughing at me. He said, I am not going to do that. And he goes, I will show you what my sponsor showed me. Because I will show you where I go to meetings. Because I am not going to call you. I am not going to chase you around. He goes, you need to call me. And he said, it's very important for you to learn to take responsibility for your recovery. And that really served me well because I don't know about you, but when I was at home, people weren't calling me up. Bill, you got enough pot?
You got enough booze?
I mean, I made sure I had that stuff. Like, if you had told me before that if I ever was at your house again, unannounced, and you beat the shit out of me, you come home, I'd come out of the bushes like, hey, what's going on? No, I don't have any money. Can you front me something? I mean, I would take that chance, you know, to get my ass beat or whatever, because I had a willingness, you know? And I mean, I was willing to go to any lengths to stay intoxicated. I don't like stealing money from my mom, but, you know, you can do what you got to do. I don't like stealing my sister's piggy bank, but I've done it. I've taken my brother and make him empty his bank account to finance bad drug deals. Anyway, I didn't really call him. The first time I call him, I'm in treatment. I call him from a phone booth, 10 o'clock at night. He's like, yeah, Bill, aren't you in that hospital? I go, yeah. He goes, well, I got to get up at 6 in the morning. Why don't you talk to a counselor or something in there? But when you get out of there, you call me. I hung up. I thought, that son of a bitch. I'm like, I'm going to call. I didn't know about Intergroup. I would have reported him if I did. But I mean, I was hurt by that. But you know what? I sought him out when I got out of there because he must have had something that I wanted. You know, and I believe the minute you take this seriously a little bit or want some help, God is lining up the perfect people to help you. He's putting together your treatment plan with none of your freaking input or decisions or anything. He's going to put the right people in your life that'll help you. And I'll tell you how you know you got good people. If they're pissing you off, they're probably good people. Because I'll tell you what, the people that seem real nice to me, they didn't help me at all. I mean, I won't say they didn't help me, but I just manipulate them. You know what I mean? My sponsor would just, oh, man. Like, he'd be like, hey, man, where are you doing Monday? I'm like, well, I'm going to young people's meeting this school. We go to the state penitentiary. Or no, we go to the state mental hospital. I'm like, why would I want to go there? And he's like, it'll keep you sober. We go down there, man, everybody's on Thorazine. They're out of their minds. They're touching you and stuff, you know. They smoke all your cigarettes. You give somebody a cigarette, they smoke the whole thing in one hit. They cough for 5 minutes. They go, can I get another cigarette? Right? And he'd be like, that's going to be you, you know, if you don't get sober. So, that's what I started doing. That's where the change happened. I started following him around. The next big thing he got me to do, I'm a one meeting a week kind of guy, and then I mysteriously relapsed in between. He was like, well, how many meetings do you go to a week? I'm like, well, you know, one. And he's like, well, how often did you drink? And I'm like, every day. He goes, well, I think you can go to a meeting every day. Now, mind you, I don't work. I don't go to school. I just sit in my mom's basement and cry about being 19 in AA, how unfair it is. And, you know, tell people, like, hey, put a hit of S in my coat, but don't tell me. If you tell me, it's a relapse. But none of them went for it. But and I always hated my people. The people that drank, my friends were like, oh, you're doing so good. And they were like, we're so proud of you. And I'd be so mad, you know, because I expected them all to quit, too. But anyway, he got me doing that. And then I started speaking places, which I couldn't believe the first time. Because, I mean, I'm the type of kid, or when I was a kid, if I had to speak in front of people, I'd just get an F. You know what I mean? Because I would just have a nervous, just sweat fest, you know, anxiety attack and do it. And they're like, well, come on down here and talk to these guys at the jail. I'm like, yeah, but I've only been sober like 28 days. They're like, well, tell them what it's like to be sober 28 days or whatever it was. And no matter what you do, what's great about AA, doesn't matter. They'll be like, you did a great job. They're probably like, great job. They kept you sober. I was like, man, these guys just lie to you all the time. But I kept doing it. I mean, I wasn't used to get anybody telling me that I was doing a good job or anything like that, you know? I'd never experienced that before. So, you know, I started hanging out with them, and it would be like, you know, all the time I was talking to jails, psych wards, probation department. The big one was he started me going to prison, which that was unbelievable. He's like, we meet at my house at 2, then we're going to drive 2.5 hours to this prison, then we're going to eat dinner, then we're going to go to the meeting for now. Anyway, we're supposed to meet at 2, we're going to get back at 10. I'm just like, you want to do 8 hours of AA in one day? Now, I easily would wait in a parking lot waiting for some guy that I think his name is Eddie that drives a GTO that might or may not sell me something. You know, I would do that regularly, but I was like, I don't want to do this. But I did it, and that's the thing, and that's the key. If you're new, you got to take action. You got to let people help you. These people, and I thought these people were nosy and getting in my business and all this kind of stuff, and it was like I didn't realize they were just trying to share, you know, what people had shared with them because it keeps them sober. That's why I'm here giving this talk tonight. I'm not trying to rescue anybody. I'm trying to stay, you know, ensure another day of sobriety. I ain't got much time left, but I wanted to talk real quick what my life's like today. Apparently, I'm retired. I just got laid off. I've been waiting to get laid off for 26 years. They finally laid me off. I knew they were going to catch me. They finally did. But, you know, and it's crazy because I'm a guy, I mean, I've worked like the last 40 years. It's crazy. When I came to AA, tax time was a nightmare. I'd have like 30 W-2s because most places I'd work about an hour and a half. You know, that's usually enough for me. And I'd just have to leave, you know, because the anxiety was too much. But, you know, what my life's like today, I mean, I really love adventure. I love the outdoors. I love the mountains. You know, I go out west usually every year for about a month, Pacific Northwest. I go hiking. All these things I used to watch and I'd want to do, but I could never do them. You know, I'd always talk about going camping and these things. I'd never make it out of the basement, you know. And so that's something I like to do. I love AA. I'm grateful that I've been active in AA for so long. And you know, I'm so grateful to people that I was new with. They got me really involved in the institutions. That's always kind of been my bread and butter, like jail, detox, stuff like that. I remember this new guy I met up north, and I'm like, well, where do you live? He's like, Nissan, Kentucky. And I'm like, Nissan, Kentucky. I'm like, oh, you live in your car. He's like, that's right, boss. And it's like, and I always need that because it always keeps my mind right, you know, because I forget, you know. I'll be living in my real life thinking that it's a normal. I mean, this is not our normal habitat. Our normal habitat is homeless shelters, county jails, you know, treatment, you know, places like that. And by doing this, you know, my daily, you know, we have a daily reprieve. I just put, you know, my sponsor told me, he said, just put AA first and everything will take care of itself. And I just think, yeah, that's easy for you to say. You work at Ford Motor Company. You're in the union. I thought I'd guilt him into getting me in the union. It never happened. But that's exactly what happened. I was at a meeting one night. Some guy, I don't even think I liked him. It was a biker came up to me, handed me a little piece of paper with an address. I worked at that place for 2 years. You know, then the next week I'm bitching about having a job. And my sponsor, he's like, how's that job going? I'm like, man, I just make minimum wage. He goes, how much you make sitting around your mom's house all day? And I'd be madder than hell, but I'd be like, this guy's a genius. You know? I'd be bitching later about I only make this much a week, or $120 a week. He goes, hell, it sounds like $120 more than you're making last week. I need that kind of stuff still to this day. You know, and I need you guys. I need you guys way more than I did when I got here. I didn't have anything to lose when I got here. You know? And the thing about AA that's wild is I did a meeting at Pinellas County Jail for 20 years. You would not believe how many people. A guy would ask a question. The guy sitting next to him would start telling him about AA and how wonderful it was. And I'd be like, what happened? You know, did you work this? Yeah. Did you spot? Yeah. Did you? What happened? I don't know. I just quit going. And then you'll hear it over and over again. How many people were at this meeting back? I was talking to Ryan about this before, when we were at the church right by the bridge at Davis Island. You got one, Dave, two, three. She might have been there once or twice, yeah. Like three people. I mean, it was full like it is tonight. And if you stick around here a while, you'll see it'll just keep receding. If everybody showed up that I've met that's been to this meeting, we'd have to meet at Raymond James Stadium. You know? But it's like, you know, it's one day at a time. And, you know, I can't tell you people how much I love each and every one of you because, I mean, if it weren't for you, I'd have no life. I mean, I had to go through a couple years ago, my father, the hardest thing I think I've been through, my dad got sick, he had a tumor, and there was nothing they could do, and my mom wouldn't let him go. We just watched for 2 months, he was in the ICU, and they're trying to get us to let him go, and we finally had to take him off life support. But because of AA, I was able to be there. I was sitting there with him when he took his last breath, holding it, praying over him, bawling, you know, I got this. It was weird I was going to leave because they were like, when we took him off the life support, the vent, they were like, it could take 15 minutes, it could be 3 days. And I was going to leave and then something told me, you know, that intuitive thought, it was like, call the chaplain. I brought the chaplain up, we prayed over and stuff, and then he passed. And, you know, I'm so grateful I was able to be there because my dad was always the one taking me to jail, getting me out of jail, the Lord, getting me into treatment, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, but I mean, I'm free of alcohol. I haven't been in sober living over 4 decades. I haven't been in detox other than voluntarily. I haven't been in jail other than voluntarily. But the big thing that's been on my mind there lately, and I think I already said it once, but if you're new, just have an open mind. Let people help you. I mean, the biggest thing that's caused me the most problem throughout my sobriety is letting people help me. With all that stuff with my dad, I had a big falling out with my mom after he died. She went completely bad shit. And I finally, I got outside help with some different stuff. I really had to because she was, but I would never do that. I'd be like, well, you just work the steps on it or whatever. And I went and got outside help, and it really helped me. And if, you know, if somebody has some kind of issue with some kind of trauma or PTSD, I encourage you to go get help for that. That's the reason, you know, because you're sober, you can do that. But I think that's about all for tonight, kids. Thanks.